Ah, yes, it's that time again. Just when you think you have it all figured out, something comes along that makes you question everything. This is Unexplained Incorporated, and we are open for business. We just want to know.
Ready to believe you.
Ready to believe you. It's all true. All of it.
Oh, yes, it is that time again. Time for your Friday night fright. The doors of Unexplained Incorporated are now open. I am your host, Phantom Phil. Welcome. If you're a seasoned listener, welcome if this is your first time, as tonight we kick off September with a case study on the Slender Man. But before we get to that, I just want to remind everyone, check out the Unexplained Incorporated Facebook page. Photos of a previous ghost walk in Niagara-on-the-Lake, Ontario, and newly added this week, photos of last weekend's walk in downtown Hamilton. Not nearly as many pics in this one, but there's some good ones you're going to want to check out, and check out the captions I wrote as well. And just a reminder, next week on the program, the tour guide himself, Dan Cumerlato, returns to Unexplained Incorporated. He was the first ever guest, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that interview and tee it up for you at the end of the program. And don't forget to check me out on Twitter, Unexplained Incorporated at PhantomPhil3. And anytime you want to shoot me an email, PhantomPhilUnexplained@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out the site that connects it all together, the blog series Motivational Metal. I know you people love that one. I'm on fire with that one right now. And past episodes of Unexplained Incorporated on the PhantomHub.com. So please do check it out. Gonna have a short but sweet show for you today. It is on the cusp of a long weekend, the last one of summer, and I'm a little burnt and exhausted for all the right reasons, though. Been a very good week for me, but I don't have a lot of energy on this one, I'm not gonna lie to you. Irregardless, not gonna skip out on quality content, so I hope you enjoy this one, and we're gonna get to it right after Amy, my assistant, the new admin on social media for Unexplained Incorporated, tees up the case study for us right now.
The September case study will look at 2018 Sony Pictures release Slender Man. With the movie proved to be quite lackluster, the real-life case it is based on is anything but. Tonight, Phantom Phil will examine the original case from 2014 and how the legend grew from there. He will also connect his own pop culture related theory to the case and examine a possible explanation known as the Tulpa Effect, which is too strange to ignore. Let us examine September's case study right now.
Thank you very much, Amy. And yes, tonight is a case study on a movie that's maybe not so much well known, but has one hell of a backstory attached to it that is actually way more interesting than the said feature film. And this is the 2018 release from Sony Pictures, known as simply The Slender Man. Now, this is the first ever PG-13 horror movie I have done on the show. The other PG-13 movie I did in a past case study, one of my first, was Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which has that alien connection I talked about, but it's more of an action-adventure flick. So this is the first horror movie that doesn't have an R rating that I am featuring on Unexplained Incorporated, and I'll get to this in a minute, but the movie itself is full of a lot of effects that are, you know, kind of subpar and a lot of cheap jump scares. And as a matter of fact, funny story as to how I got connected to this movie in the first place is that my daughter was having a visit with her mother earlier in the summer, and they actually watched this movie together. She's just about at the right age to start getting into horror movies, and this is a decent gateway one. It's not too bad for kids. And she even told me herself that she thought the movie was kind of cheesy. And guess what? She's not wrong. Like I said, on what could have been a very cool, story-heavy, psychological thriller, relies a lot on a lot of lame dialogue, jump scares, and a narrative that really goes all over the place. And at least in my opinion, doesn't get you fully engaged in the characters, as it's mostly teenage actors in this movie. I'm going to run down the list right now for you. These are the main actors in the movie. We have Joey King, Julia, Goldani Telez, Jazz Sinclair, Annalise Basso, Alex Fitzallen, and the director for this was Selvon White. If you're expecting me to run down any stories about those people, I'm sorry, I have none. Other than watching this movie, I really don't have any background on the people in it, as there aren't any big names or celebrities I recognize. I don't know much about the director either. And it kind of shows. Like I said, I don't want to beat up on the film too badly, but it really was not one of my favorites. But how it connects and ties into the main story is the main reason I am recording this for the case study of September. So, I mean, something like this would have been a lot cooler on like an X-Files episode or some episodic TV show that does these kind of topics week to week, but stretching it out all the way to a 90-minute, and it barely reaches the 90-minute mark in a feature-length film, just wasn't all that enticing for me. And like I said, they just went the cheap way with the gimmicks and the jump scares, and could have gone in a different direction, put it into the context of more of a psychological thriller, because this story is really all about how certain events can affect the human psyche. And a little bit later on in the case study, we're going to study a theory that I find very intriguing as to how this whole thing could have manifested into physical reality out of the collective unconscious imagination of the people. I know that sounds pretty wild, but we're going to get to that later on. First, I want to briefly run down my analysis of the 2018 movie itself. So the movie, and this is not where the actual case happened, which I'm going to get to later, this takes place in the Massachusetts, New England area. And I think that's actually a pretty good setting for the movie, because that area already has an association with horror mythology that includes, of course, world-famous pioneering authors H.P. Lovecraft and Stephen King. Stephen King wrote Salem's Lot about the very famous town in that state. And I believe the Blair Witch Project 1 or 2 is supposed to take place up in that area as well. If I have that wrong, I apologize. And I know the movies were probably filmed in that area. So it's a smart place to hold this type of a story. And then when that part of the U.S. reaches autumn, there's a real cool, eerie ambiance about it. So that gets a small bonus point for me. And the movie starts with a group of teenage girls going to a friend's house for a sleepover, and they find a thread in a chat room or an online forum that takes them to the Slender Man. And the movie is based on the popularity of an online game, which became All Too Deadly and All Too Real. So the legend has it that this creature, who is tall and slender and has long, wobbly, outstretched arms, he uses the arms and flails them to try and hypnotize the children. He wears a black suit and tie, and he has tendrils, which are like octopus tentacles, but not quite. And there's several of them. They're huge. They run out of his back, and they're used to strangle his victims. And you also can't see his face, which makes the image more creepy. Now, I will give the filmmakers credit here, as the actual on-screen manifestation of the Slender Man looks kind of cool and kind of creepy. However, I think they show too much of it. I've talked about this in past case studies, I think especially on the Mothman Prophecies episode, where usually what you don't see is scarier than what you do see, and less is more. And I feel one too many times in the physical realm in the film, they show too much of the Slender Man and maybe should have just shown more bits and pieces of him at one time. However, on screen, it still looks fairly menacing. I'll admit to that. So the girls summon him from this online forum, and it's very reminiscent of the legends of Bloody Mary. And of course, if you were watching horror movies in the early 90s, like I was, Candyman, Tony Todd, you know, the one based on the Clive Barker novel, you call his name three times and the man with the hook comes and gets you. It's similar with the Slender Man. It's like if you follow a ritual, follow a refrain in this online form, he will manifest and he will come for the souls of small children. And the imagery they use on this online site in the movie, it's very reminiscent of the all-seeing eye. You know, the one in the pyramid on the United States dollar bill, the one that people commonly refer to as the Illuminati symbol, and is allegedly said to represent the elite or secret societies who really run the world. The Slender Man logo from the website has a very similar all-seeing eye, which is just seeped into so much occult symbolism over society. And I'm not even talking about the pyramid on the dollar bill. It's in so many other things as well. So I found that very interesting that they put it on the website in the film as well. And of course, this is a typical horror movie arc where one friend disappears, and of course her father's an alcoholic, and they think he may or may not have something to do with it, but in the end it's not him. And then the friends slowly start dropping off one by one by one until the main character goes and gets a final showdown with her sister, which, you know, we'll get to in a little while. But the first friend who disappears, they find Slender Man drawings and sketches all throughout her bedroom in the house, and they're trying to decide if she had a mental breakdown or what have you. And then what's really interesting is that they briefly dive into the mythology as to what the Slender Man might be based off of. And they talk about this character, I believe, is called Abizu. It's spelled A-B-Y-Z-O-U, and it's known as the taker of children. So I don't know if this is from folklore or if it's supposed to be the name of a demon or what have you. But this is the type of thing I wanted the movie to explore a little bit more and create more of a backstory, even if it didn't have anything to do with the real case. But it just gets explored very briefly in a matter of seconds, and then it's gone. And then, like I said earlier, we go back to the jump scares, and there's this really cheap one in the school library where the main character thinks she sees something and it's just the librarian, and then it sets up to an actual one, and it's just so cheesy and predictable. And there's also too many scenes of characters having nightmares and hallucinations, which tie into these jump scares, because one of the effects of summoning the Slender Man is that your mental condition is supposed to deteriorate to the point where you have hallucinations and psychotic episodes and what have you, but they kind of go overkill with this part of the story, and I think the movie as a whole suffers because of it. Like I said, less is more, and they show way too much of this. Couple of cool random pop culture references I want to tie into this case study are that there's something about a villain or a creature that doesn't have a physically distinguishable face that I find really creepy. And one cool example of this that popped into my head while watching the movie was that if you remember way back in the early 90s, the Dick Tracy movie based on the comics, how there was this mysterious villain called the Blank who wore a fedora and a trench coat and then just did not have a face and talked in a digitized voice. And it was pretty cool and pretty badass. And for those who haven't seen it, spoiler alert, I'll warn you right now, it ends up being Madonna's character all along and is a totally lame payoff, in my opinion. But I just wanted to bring that up because the whole no-face villain thing reminded me of the Blank and Dick Tracy and the potential it could have had if it had a better reveal behind it. And not being able to see a face on something is just extra creepy to me. And here's another interesting parallel I found. I am a wrestling fan, and one of the best characters on modern wrestling TV is WWE's Bray Wyatt. And for those who are not in the know or who do not follow, he debuted a new character in the spring of 2019 where he was the host of a kid's show, but it was a really sick and twisted one, and he kept referring to having to appease him or to let him in or not to make him angry. And it took a while before we realized who him actually was. And this is how the children refer to the Slender Man in the movie, and excuse the plane in the background. I do live near an airport, and maybe the truth I'm about to drop on this case, they're coming after me. But hey, we'll just have to deal with it. So Bray Wyatt, he refers to him, and the children in Slender Man, the teens, refer to him as well. That's how they talk to him. He wants children. He wants the souls or whatever. And what Bray Wyatt is referring to is his alter ego known as the Fiend, which is this hideous masked character that seems to get summoned and take over his mind and has it manifest into a life of its own. So there's Bray Wyatt, the children's TV host, and then there's the Fiend, who doesn't speak, wears this hideous mask, and just wreaks havoc on whoever's around him. And I kind of wonder if Bray got a hold of the Slender Man legend and incorporated some of it into his evolution into the Fiend character. And for those who don't know what I'm talking about, go look it up on YouTube and let me know your thoughts. And it's a very interesting parallel, in my opinion, and I don't think I'm too off base with it. So that's pretty much all I have to say about the movie. Like I said, it just goes, each character keeps disappearing, getting knocked off until the main character is in the hospital with her sister, who's also had similar sightings and attacks. And then they pretty much get consumed by the Slender Man, and that's that. And like I said, there were some promising fleeting moments in this movie. However, it just didn't deliver for me and relied on too many shallow characters, uninspired performances, and just cheap jump scares. And with that being said, it is now time to move onto the actual case, which is far more stranger and more creepy than anything that took place in the 2018 movie. So doing some research on this, I had to refresh my memory as this happened a few years ago. On an episode of Nightline, they did a full feature on the Slender Man case. And this is essentially the case that started, maybe not started the whole phenomenon, but took it to a very scary new level. And this is the case that the movie was roughly based on. So a teenage girl, or I guess preteen, 12 years old, Peyton Luttner, was stabbed 19 times by two of her close friends at a sleepover, which is really insane if you break it down. And those friends' names were Morgan and Anissa. This happened around, I believe, late 2014. The case dragged into 2015. Peyton somehow lived through this and has made a full recovery and is interviewed extensively in this feature. And what happened was, there was this online phenomenon surrounding the Slender Man, which I will get to shortly. And because of that, Anissa and Morgan lured Peyton out into the woods away from her home. And the reason they said they did it was to protect their families. And the justification of these two girls, who both ended up in the psych ward, by the way, was that they had to sacrifice their friend Peyton in order to protect their families from the Slender Man. So let that sink in for a second. They had to sacrifice one of their best friends to the Slender Man. Otherwise, they claim he was going to show up and kill the rest of their families. You can probably imagine how that case held up in courts and why each girl ended up in the psych ward. So where did this come from? Did this just completely come out of the blue? Because that's not the nature of kids that age. Not even close. But they swore up and down that this is why they performed the ritualistic stabbing that they did. And once again, Peyton was incredibly lucky to pull through and make it out the other side. And I'm a parent for a child like right around this age group, and I couldn't even fathom what would happen if, you know, my child were involved in any part of something like this. I can't even describe it. Like, don't even want to know. So what would drive a couple of presumably innocent 12-year-old girls to perform such an atrocity like this and basically blame an entity that may or may not exist? It's a really scary thought. But now, I want to walk you through a couple of other examples, and then we're going to explore the origin of this entity that has seemed to take over the minds, hearts, and souls of the innocent. In Northern California, before 2014, there was a fire. California, the state itself, which I've been to a couple of times, is mostly desert or forestry, like large redwood trees, large mountains. So it's very prone to fires, especially with the hot temperatures in the summertime, which I'm sure you see on the news. And this was actually a house fire in Northern California, and 14 children were presumed missing in the fire. Here's the problem. The police and fire crews found remains of 14 bodies, but it wasn't the children. It wasn't the children that were presumed missing. And to make things even more bizarre, photos would show up to the police station months after the blaze of the missing children. And the missing children were pictured with what looked like the Slender Man. Between these two cases, I can't even begin to explain how that went down. But what I can explain is this. The origins of the Slenderman phenomena date all the way back to the late 2000s. The conceptual design was drawn up around June 10th of 2009 as part of a Photoshop contest online. The design itself, the look with the slender arms, no face, and the tendrils, was inspired by Zach Parsons' That Insidious Beast, and also partially inspired from Stephen King's The Mist. It was like a mishmash of the two. And this gets submitted to a Photoshop contest online in the summer of 2009. So from there, it begins to take on a life of its own. In 2013, the YouTube channel Marble Hornets went unexpectedly viral. By viral, I mean this channel would grow to get 250,000 subscriptions and 55 million views. The reason being, Marble Hornets wasn't anybody famous or well known, but they were a film student that was trying to film like a short horror movie in the woods and allegedly caught the Slender Man on camera. And then what happens a year later while that channel builds up to all those subs and the 55 million views? Peyton gets stabbed by two of her best friends. And then this story makes it to court. It breaks out in the media. And parents now realize that there is an online character known as the Slender Man that may or may not be having a negative influence on their children. Also in 2014, a girl set fire to her house in Florida, claiming that the Slender Man told her to do it. In that same year, in Hamilton, Ohio, a 13-year-old girl attacks her mother with a knife. So, breaking into 2014 and 2015, it appears to be there's a major problem, at least in the United States. Children are committing crimes and are blaming the Slender Man, who at this point is almost like an online meme. And nobody can prove whether the Slender Man actually exists or not, or if this is some type of weird hysteria going around. This reminds me, this whole phenomenon, about something that happened in the States in the mid to late 80s. For those of you that are familiar with the Satanic Panic, as to how all these disappearances were allegedly tied into satanic ritual and abuse, and there probably is some truth to that, as some of that is revealed to still be going on today in some parts of the world, unfortunately. But this was a story that got blown way out of proportion. And another part of that story was the influence heavy metal music had on the youth, especially teenagers. And some bands, like some major artists like Ozzy Osbourne and Judas Priest, wound up in a courtroom in front of a judge because some youths had allegedly committed suicide after listening to some of their music, or even committed murder. And then this whole headline blew things out of proportion that claimed that heavy metal bands were putting in backwards messaging into their music to get people to commit violent acts. Which, if you think about it, is really kind of absurd. I mean, not the fact that there's backwards messaging in music, that is a very real thing and has been done over the years, but to have it put in there with the intent to kill or to commit suicide, I think is kind of ridiculous, because bands need an audience and need fans to make money. So why would they put these types of things in their recordings and risk losing any member of their fan base? Whether it be morality-wise or business-wise, it doesn't make any sense. Unless you want to get conspiratorial and say, oh, it, you know, somebody put it in there. They put it in the file mix without them knowing. I don't know. The point I'm trying to make is that this whole brief hysteria, it was treated the same way as the Slender Man. Heavy metal was allegedly, although never proven, to incite kids to commit acts of murder, maybe even suicide or other rituals. And the Slender Man, in the mid-2010s, it was the scapegoat of a lot of crimes that were being committed by minors. So you can come to your own conclusions as to what actually happened with these murders in these cases. And look, there is a ton of research and a ton of videos on this subject matter out there. I don't want to regurgitate all of it for you because I welcome you to look it up on your own and to do your own research and jump to your own conclusions. That is the purpose of doing these case studies on Unexplained Incorporated. I add my insight, I do my own research, but I don't need to explore it from every angle and regurgitate the information as is on every single case. But I always find something really neat takes place during my research, which I like to personalize and incorporate it into the episode, which I feel I've done a decent job of so far. And this brings me to the last two major points of what the Slender Man might be. Now, clearly, it is an online phenomenon which may or may not have completely spiraled out of control. But one thing I came across was a concept rooted in Tibetan Buddhism that I find really fascinating. And I'm a big believer in this concept. I just didn't know what the name was or its official definition. So I'm going to share that with you right now. This is what is known as the Tulpa effect. The Tulpa effect is when, if enough people believe something is real, it can manifest into the physical realm. And this is the similar to things like the law of attraction, where it says, oh, say you need $50 by the 31st of the month, and you wish on it, you put your intention in, you put your energy in, and then all of a sudden, you unexpectedly get a check for $50 in the mail. It's the same type of concept. However, the argument that is being made is that the Slender Man and its legend grew so much online, especially with the younger people, that maybe they were scared into believing it was real to the point where enough group consciousness and group energy manifested to the point where maybe something from a darker realm or an alternate dimension manifested into this world, the physical realm, and committed these horrible crimes or put up the young children to do so. So think about that one for a little while, and here's a further insight into what the Tulpa effect actually is and what it's all about. Here we go. A tulpa is a thought form or being created from the collective thoughts of separate individuals. The concept of tulpas is theoretical in nature and originates from Tibetan Buddhism mythology, where tulpas are described as extra bodies that were created from one person's mind in order to travel to spiritual realms. Excuse me. The tulpa effect is the name given to the unintentional creation of a tulpa based on collective belief of a being with similar traits. Is it possible, dear listener, that so many people in a certain period of time believed that the Slender Man was real and could in fact hurt people, that maybe it manifested itself out of the ether? Sounds pretty wild, I know. However, if you do practice manifesting and you believe in the law of attraction, this stuff has a lot more merit to it than you may want to believe or what mainstream science may want to tell you. I know I'm speaking from experience here. And one quick example I'll give before I move on to my last theory. on what the Slender Man could be is that I won't get into the full details here because I think it did escalate into a fairly serious situation. But at an old job, me and a friend of mine, and we did this just to amuse ourselves and, you know, stay sane, working long hours in the cold and whatnot. We came to the conclusion that somebody we knew and some of the management at our work were conspiring in an underground sports gambling ring. I know it sounds so ridiculous, but I mean, if you were there and you were joking around with us, you'd understand where the context came from. But we ran with the joke for so long, it got more and more ridiculous. But it was one of those things, like, it kept us sane during a long, grinding work day, and it really took on a life of its own. And then things would happen that would almost, like, manifest into what we were saying. Like, we would say, okay, well, this individual's got to be involved with what's going on, and then we'd see that individual a few days later doing something kind of suspicious and weird. And we were like, what is going on here? Like, we're just joking around. Is something actually going on? Anyway, it all built up to a point where the person we initially put in this whole crazy conspiratorial, I don't even know what to call it, conspiratorial maze or whatever that my buddy and I invented. This person, all of a sudden, one day, this is like a month before I left the job myself, wrote their notice on a paper towel, slammed it down on a desk, and left the building without even cleaning out their locker, and said they had to go, family emergency. And just so you know, I've never heard from this person again. I don't want to say that what me and my buddy were talking about manifested into reality, but to me, that's a very creepy synchronicity and could be defined as the Tulpa effect. I have no explanation then and I have no explanation now. So after experiencing something like that, having the Slender Man being manifested out of the ether by hundreds and maybe thousands of scared children, it really wouldn't surprise me at this point. Now that I got that wildness out of the way, for my scientific friends, because hey, we do love science here on Unexplained Incorporated. We can't be in outer space all the time. However, I just believe, and I'm sure many of you do as well, that science is not always the be-all and end-all, especially when investigating and looking into unexplained phenomenon like this. I want to share quantum theory with you. This is another theory I came across that could explain the Slender Man. So hear this one out. Quantum theory is a central theory to the explanation of the apparent supernatural nature of the Slender Man and is a competitor to the core theory and the Tulpa effect. Quantum theory is based in around the idea that Slender Man is a physical substratum, not a thought form whose existence and powers are in part reliant on physics and understood science. Slender walking can be attributed to both of these theories. The explanation seeks a physical explanation and not a pseudo-scientific explanation for Slender Man. This and the definition of the Tulpa effect, which I read earlier, can be found at theslenderman.fandom.com. If you do want to explore this further, I recommend you go to that site as it seems to be the central hub for all things involved with the Slender Man. So, this thing, this entity, which I hope I never ever see in my life, could be part of the Tulpa effect. It could be a physical manifestation related to quantum physics. Or it could just be one crazy act of mass hypnosis applied onto younger, vulnerable people. I don't know. You, the listener, as always at the end of these case studies, can be the judge. I just hope that I don't ever encounter this thing. physical manifestation or not. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that does it for the September case study. I don't want to give away too much right now, but I got a real neat idea cooking up for the case study in early October. More details when I am able to announce it. And speaking of big announcements, I am going to have some big announcements for the month of October very shortly, sometime in the next couple of weeks, I'm hoping. As I've had some meetings, I've reached out to some people, and there's going to be some really cool stuff planned for the month of October, as we have five Fridays, five shows that month, and Unexplained Incorporated itself is going to be adding a lot more features and making this a lot more of an interactive experience for you, the listener. And if you're on board, whether you were here from day one back at the end of March or very recently, welcome aboard and thank you so much for tuning in. This show just keeps growing and growing, and it keeps growing organically, which is probably the biggest thing I am proud of in terms of this program so far. So let's keep it up. Like us on the Facebook page, hit me up on Twitter, and just good old word of mouth. If you know people that are into this or they have a good story to tell, send them my way. I'd love to hear what they have to say. I'd love to hear their feedback, and I'd love to have them download and tune into the show. It would be really good stuff. But I don't want to be a tease, but October is looking to be a primetime deal for Unexplained Incorporated, and I'm so excited to roll those out for you in the coming weeks. But in the near future, next week, Dan Cumerlotto returns to Unexplained Incorporated, as he was the very first guest on the show back in April. He has kindly donated his time again. He was my tour guide in downtown Hamilton at the Ghost Walk the previous weekend, and he did a fantastic job. And he is back with some fantastic stories. I changed the interview up a lot because since I've been able to experience his tours, I had a whole new line of questioning, and we have some very entertaining war stories between the two of us with some of the nature of the questioning. And you're going to hear a really bizarre one that happened to me that night, not during the ghost tour, but afterwards as I was walking to my car. And yeah, it's a real beauty. It's a fun interview, and you're going to love tuning in. But in the meantime, visit thephantomhub.com. Love to have you on board with everything I am doing there. And until next week, you know how it goes. Stay strong, stay healthy, and most importantly, stay curious. Until next week, the doors of Unexplained Incorporated are now closed.